This week's mailbag comes to us from Julie. I am the notebook journal queen. I have been my whole life. I am a mother of two, and they attend two different schools. I volunteer, I am in a book club, I run a successful and demanding business from home with a husband who works shift work. My lists were my lifeline. When we moved into our home 10 years ago, my brother-in-law stopped after multiple trips into our home and said, "This is the sixth box labeled Julie's Journals," and I replied, "There are two more." Recently, I listened to the Ditch Your To-Do List for index cards on the way to a client's. After I thought, notebooks will work for me. And then four times that day, I had something come to my mind and I thought, I need to put this on an index card. Tuesday, it happened four more times. Wednesday, it happened six times, and I went and picked up index cards for my beautiful sister. Today, I joined my daughter's school on a field trip, my first time leaving my home without a notebook in years. Two 911s came in from clients. They are on an index card now in my pocket because I know this is action I need to take today. I was able to make my note and immediately jump back into being present, and not once today have I worried about forgetting which notebook I put the note in or repeating in my head, "Don't forget to, don't forget to." My mental clarity and peace has been transformed, and I am full of gratitude. Thank you, Lisa. Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. This month, we're talking about how where and when we are born really shapes our point of view on so many things. We've already talked about race. Last week, we talked about the generation that you're born into. And today, I want to talk about your religion of origin. I know, I'm pretty much hitting all the things you're not supposed to talk about, except for politics. And no, I will not be discussing politics. So my upbringing, my religion that I was born into is interesting because my parents were married in 1971. And in 1971, my dad was an Irish Catholic and my mom was a Protestant. And at that time, when you got married in the Catholic Church, you had to sign a paper saying that your children would be raised Catholic. And my mom later told me that she said, "This is worth the paper it's written on." Like, you can't make people be what they want to be. But they got married and the assumption was that the children, Emily and I, would be raised Catholic. And growing up, we went to church here or there, but I remember my first memories of church were in first and second grade when I would go to public school, and then once a week, we would go over to the Catholic church and I would take Catholic class, CCD, and I would learn about Catholicism. And one of the things I've told you before, how much I love big families. My dad's family, I told you, came over from Ireland, and my great-grandmother lived to be 103, I believe, and she would recite for you the poems that she had to learn in school. She would play the accordion. She spoke in an Irish brogue. I could still hear it in my voice today. "Oh, when I think of it," she would say. She would offer you some more Pepsi and some more cookies, and she was always playing Chinese checkers and beating the pants off of everyone. And I loved my grandma, my great-grandma, and I loved the heritage of that fresh immigrant family having come from Ireland. Because on my mom's side of the family, I'm a daughter of the American Revolution. I mean, they've been here since before the United States was a country, and that juxtaposition was always in my mind. So as I was growing up, you know, we went to public school, and then on, I think it was Monday night, we would go to CCD. And this was all, you know, my parents were just raising us in the Catholic faith, doing what we were supposed to do. And then in fourth or fifth grade, I started attending Catholic school. And my sister was kindergarten or first grade. I can't remember when we made the transition. I think it was fourth grade. And then I didn't have to go to church school on Monday nights because I was getting my church class at school. So we went to Catholic school. We would go over to Mass every once in a while. And our family growing up, we weren't really big, like, go to church on Sunday people. And part of that was because my mom wasn't Catholic. Like, my dad was Catholic, but my mom wasn't Catholic, and she didn't convert. Now, what I know of their family lineage, like, growing up, my mom, I think, was a couple of different religions, one being Christian Scientists. What I remember of my grandmother was after she was remarried to my grandfather, her husband had died. My mom's dad had died before my mom got married. My grandmother got remarried right before my mom and dad got married. So in our family, my grandpa that I grew up with that lived 102, 103, however old he was Presbyterian. And so then grandma was Presbyterian and they always went to the same church and I loved their church. Oh my goodness, did I love their church. I used to go up and spend the night at grandma's house. Well, she also did puzzles and you guys know how much I love jigsaw puzzles. So jigsaw puzzles, hearing a train run through their backyard, the sound of a grandfather clock and going to a Presbyterian church on Sunday, that was my idea of fun. This could explain why I wasn't invited to a lot of parties when I was in high school or college. But I mean, grade school, high school, if I could spend the weekend with grandma, which was about 45 minutes away, I did. And I would go to Bay Presbyterian Church. And I loved Hugh Auburn so much that he eventually was the man that married us. Like, he traveled to a different church to marry us when Greg and I got married. And his stories that he would tell from the pulpit, like as a child, like I understood them and I loved his teaching. And they let me work with the children in the Sunday school. We really didn't have that in the Catholic Church. Like all the kids were with their parents in the church. And so there were so many things that I loved about the Presbyterian church. Now, as a child, clearly, I'm not telling you any of the basic tenets of religion. I'm telling you what I liked and what I didn't like. I didn't like going to school on Monday nights, and I did like being able to watch babies, and I did like the way that Hugh Auburn gave his ministry. Well, over the years, I was kind of a precocious child, if you haven't noticed. Not like I was not bad behaved, like I was never in the principal's office, but I was a questioner and I would ask questions. So if any of you have been in Catholic school and those of you that are listening that were in Catholic school with me will remember both of these stories. So we're in eighth grade and before you make your confirmation, you have to do confession. And I went into confession and I started my confession, "Dear Father, it's been so long since I have sinned, you know, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "By the way, why do I have to do this anyway?" And of course, I choose face-to-face confessional. And so the priest looks at me and he said, "What?" Like, I mean, it's pretty rote in the Catholic Church. There's no spontaneous discussions going on in the confessional unless you're Lisa Kelly. So I'm like, "Yeah, I just don't understand why I have to tell you my sins. Like, if I tell Jesus my sins when I'm in bed at night, like, he's already heard me and I'm already forgiven. So why do I have to tell you?" Like, eighth grade, you guys, eighth grade. And the priest, I don't even remember what he said, but the gist of it was, because he said so, like, this is how it's done. Like, you don't get to just do this on your own. You have to. I just didn't like this answer. I didn't think this was a very complete answer. So I come out of the confessional. I don't know how long I was in there, probably over 20 minutes. Now you have to know, imagine, especially if you're in Catholic school. 50 kids in my class total, 25 per classroom, probably 25 of us at the church at a time. Two priests are supposed to hear all of our confessions, and then we do our Hail Marys, and then we go back to school so we could have our confirmation on the weekend, right? I was in there for 20 minutes. I come out, and the face of my classmates, I was like, why are they all looking at me like that? I was in there 20 minutes. This is supposed to take like 90 seconds. They said, "What did you say in there? How many Hail Marys do you have to do?" I was like, "Oh, he didn't give me any." They're like, what is going on? Like, he was just like, "Get her out of my confessional booth." Now, a few years prior, I had gone to a Christian camp. I had heard the story about how Jesus was there to save our sins. And I had prayed the prayer of reconciliation. I had accepted Jesus into my heart. My mom and dad picked me up from camp. And I said, "Mom, Dad, I accepted Jesus into my heart." And Dad said, "No, you didn't. Get in the car." And he slammed the door. And we all laugh about it today. I do know later in life it pained him that that was his response to the fact that I had accepted Jesus into my heart. But it's kind of a funny story, don't you think? He's like, no. Because in his mind, Religion was part of his heritage. It was what he did. It's the only thing he knew. What was I talking about? Like, I don't even know what you're talking about, but get in the car. We got to go home. I've got another 45 minutes to go, and then I've got to go to work tomorrow. So my questioning in religion was always brought about with my parents by like, why are you questioning this? Like, this religion is 2,000 years old. Why do you have to ask so many questions? Don't you think they've already been answered? There's a book about it. Read the Bible. Like, all of your questions will be answered in the Bible, which I did. I read it. I highlighted it. I loved it. I devoured it. So I went to Catholic high school, and I didn't have to go to Catholic high school. I wanted to go to Catholic high school. I wanted to go to St. Vincent, St. Mary. I was so excited to go. And freshman year, I'm still a questioner. I'm still trying to figure out how this whole answer of why do I have to go to confession? So Bishop Pilla comes to our church or our school freshman year to our religion class. And I don't remember what he shared. He talked for like 5 or 10 minutes. And then poor Mr. Pletz, he was like, does anybody have any questions? Now, think back to your high school classroom. How many people raise their hand? Not a lot, right? I always rose my hand. I'm the person, when I raise a hand, you're like, oh, we are never getting out of this class. Greg will say, you're the one, aren't you? You're the one that had another question that made us stay another 5 minutes when they were going to let us go early. I'm like, yep, I was totally that one. So I raise my hand. No joke. Mr. Pletz puts his elbow on his table, puts his forehead in his hand, and he's just like, oh, no. What is she going to ask the bishop? Because I'd been asking questions about religion every day. I mean, it was really just a conversation between the two of us in religion class, truth be told. So I say, Bishop Pilla, why do I have to go to confession? Because if I profess my sins to Jesus in bed at night, aren't I forgiven? What? And he went into this whole long thing about how Jesus gave the power to the Pope, and the Pope gave the power to the bishop and or the cardinals and the bishop and whatever, and then the priests. And then I have to go through them in order to get the forgiveness. So I got my answer, but I didn't like my answer. So I decided junior year, I was going to double down on this Catholicism thing. Like, I mean, this is the oldest, you know, other than Judaism. And I realized I couldn't like get into that one. So I was going to go all in on the Catholic thing. I was going to be a Eucharistic minister. I was considering being a nun, except I really, really wanted to have kids. So I couldn't figure out how that was going to work. So I thought, as a woman in the Catholic Church, the closest I can get to Jesus is being a Eucharistic minister, because I can't be a priest and I can't be a nun because I want children too badly. So that's the closest I can get. And I applied to be a Eucharistic minister. And at that time, there was not a priest at our church. There was a woman who was in that person's role. And she said, no. She told me no. And I was like, what do you mean no? And she said, well, you had to get 2 references and you had to have them in by this date and you had to da, da, da. I said, but I got 3 references and it was just, you know, a day late. And this is the only thing I could do to get as close as possible to God and, you know, to be a Eucharistic minister. And could I please, you know, I really want to do this. And she said, I kid you not. She said, Jesus gave the power to the Pope, that gave it to the cardinal, that gave it to the bishop, that gave it to the priest, that gave it to me. And I'm saying no. And I just sat there and I was like, I can't win. Like, in this religion, I can't get close to God or Jesus because everybody's saying no to me. Like, they won't let me participate in my faith. Now, this is not, I love, love the Catholic faith and religion. And I obviously got in touch with people who do not understand the crux and the essence of the thing. I get that. I'm telling you my story because I was questioning. Like, I was questioning my faith, and I was getting an open hand from the Protestant religions over and over and over again. I was in a, there were 2 Protestant kids at our Catholic school, 2 guys, and I went to their church to go to their youth group. And this church was so open and accepting to me as a Catholic. They let me sing in their quartet, so I sang every Sunday. They let me teach their vacation Bible school. They let me run their Sunday school. They let me help in their nursery. I lived at that church. If I was not babysitting other people's kids, I was at that church. I was never home. I was at school, I was at their church, or I was babysitting all the time. And I could not reconcile to myself how a church I was not even a member of, I wasn't even that religion, was letting me participate so fully. And the church I was born into and I was fully a participant in was not letting me participate at all. Like, I could not reconcile that to myself. And then I went off to college. And I at that time at home, my mom and dad both had accepted Christ, and they had switched churches, and they were starting to grow in their faith as well. And when I met Greg, I was in college, and I had converted, or I'd changed to being Presbyterian. And the first time I brought Greg home to meet my extended family, my great-grandmother was there. She was in her late 90s at that point. And she sat down and she talked to Greg, and she said, she had like a 2 or 3 sentence conversation with him. And then she looked at me and she said, "A nice boy. Is he a Catholic?" And I said, "No, Grandma." And she goes, "Hmm." And she got up and she walked away. I was just glad she didn't ask me, because I had changed my religion. I was like, "Don't ask me, Grandma. Don't ask me if I'm still a Catholic, because I'm not still a Catholic." Oh, boy. You know, I'm sharing all this and I'm thinking, oh, I hope I'm not offending you. I hope I'm not, I hope you're taking this story in the light in which it is given. I'm sharing you an insight into my point of view that I had growing up and I have now in relation to religion. And once I was in college and I sought and I learned and I researched even more, I determined that I really wanted to be a Jew. Like, that's really what I wanted. Like, that would be the closest to being Jesus there could be, because he was Jewish, you know? Like, I just wanted to know more about that and realize that that was not a path that was open to me. But just because that wasn't the religion I was going to practice, I could still love it and learn about it. And I did. And my mom and I went to China as part of a people-to-people ambassador program when I was in college that I was invited to do. And there were some Jewish people on our trip that we actually stayed with on the way home and did a traditional Seder with us so that I could experience that. Fast forward to when I got married. Greg and I got married in the Presbyterian Church, and I got very active and involved in there, just as I had been in high school. And I did Vacation Bible School, and I was on the women's ministry thing, and I was running adult Bible study, and I was doing all of the things. And one Mother's Day, we were sitting there, Greg and I had been trying to get pregnant for a couple of years, and we still were not pregnant. And the one other woman I knew there that did not have children came up to tell me on Mother's Day that she was pregnant. And I was very excited for her. And I was very sad for me. And I realized at that point that this particular Presbyterian church wasn't going to work for me anymore, because it was so family focused. And what I observed in the Presbyterian religion is many people grew up and went to church with their families, then they went to college, and then in their early 20s didn't go to church, and then they had children and they came back to church. So that 20-year-old pod of people in that church didn't really exist, because they went away from the church and came back once they had children. So we left church that morning and we started driving around, and Greg said, "Where are we going, Lisa?" I said, "I don't know. There's that Vineyard Church, and that Vineyard, I hear there are young people without children there. Let's go to that Vineyard Church." So we went over to the Vineyard in Cincinnati, Ohio. It was in Tri-County. It has multiple locations now. It had multiple locations then. It was a really, it was the start of the big church that is here. And we were right. People there did not have children. And within a couple of years of attending there, we did have children. And so I dove right into that church as well, wrote a church curriculum that ultimately was published by Tommy Nelson Publishers. And we were active in that church for over 20 years. It's really, really a big, huge part of our life. We had a small group there, a lot of things. And then over the last 12, 18 months, we kind of stopped attending. It's really weird to tell you. Someone who has been so active in seeking out how to grow in her religion really hasn't been going anywhere for kind of a year. And I shared this inside of the 100-day Facebook community in the last couple of months. Greg and I have decided that at this time in our life, the best kind of church to go to is on YouTube. And so we are attending Andy Stanley's church in Atlanta through YouTube, and not always what they're studying during the week. Like, that sermon is interesting, and we listen to that sermon series, which has been really, really good for us. So why do I share these stories? The reason why I'm sharing this story on this podcast in the month of March is because I want you to think about your religion story, Maybe you don't practice any religion. Maybe like me, you've practiced multiple religions. Maybe like me, your mother and father are different religions. Or maybe like my dad's family, you've always been one religion and is so ingrained and embedded in you that when you meet a new person that's going to marry into the family, it's the first question you ask, what is your religion? How much does this come into play in your everyday life and in what you decide you want to keep, how you preserve your memories, how you look at the world? I really don't have an organizational implication here, but I do think that this podcast going forward will allow me to refer back to your religion story, your religion point of view as we continue to grow and develop together. All right, next week is the last in this four-part series that I'm doing where I'm just sharing with you about a little bit more about me so that you know my point of view. My point of view is from a Christian. I've been in almost all the Christian sects, but I am a Christian. Like that is my worldview, is always going to be biblically based, having grown up in Catholic schools, having sought out religion for myself, having read the Bible 5 times in 18 months, thinking that that's what would get me pregnant. Newsflash, it did not, but I really understand the Bible now. I can't quote chapter and verse. I can't tell you where it is, but if you start a phrase, I probably can finish it. And I know that, you know, my religious journey does impact the point of view that I have and how I share information here on Organized 365. So that's where that point of view is coming from. I'll see you next week.